This is Mark Strassman, reporter with Utopia Media. We're about to talk to Tom Lydon, who's vice president at Powerlight, a solar energy company. Welcome to Utopia Media.
Hi, Mark. Great to be here.
Just by way of background, why don't we talk about where the energy and solar energy comes from? It really has to do with a huge thermonuclear reaction going on in the sun, right?
Yeah, that's right. But your listeners need to know that there are different types of solar energy, and you know, back in the 70s and early 80s, there was a lot of activity in the solar industry for solar thermal.
Right.
Where you're taking the heat from the sun and transferring that, using that to heat hot water or heat a home or a swimming pool.
Right. This was essentially the black panels up on roofs that
heated
water and used it in those ways that you mentioned.
Exactly. But the main part of the industry at this point is in photovoltaics, or PV,
right,
where you're using the light from the sun to create electricity.
Okay.
And, you know, there's a complicated process. You know, the photovoltaic effect is fairly complicated on a molecular level, but basically you get energy in the form of photons from the sun, and that photon, when it hits a semiconductor, actually creates a charge. And what we do in the industry is we kind of channel that charge so that we could use it as electric power.
So essentially what you're getting is you're getting photons in and electrons out.
Exactly.
Okay. So with that basic process in mind, what does Powerlight do in the process of converting the solar photons into usable electricity?
What Powerlight does is we specialize in large-scale commercial photovoltaic systems. We manufacture basically deployment technologies where we take solar modules that are manufactured by companies like Sharp and Sanyo and Shell and BP, and we incorporate them into our various products, and then we, as a company, deploy them into projects.
So your customers are what kind of, what class of organization or individual?
It's, you know, mostly commercial and government customers. We work with federal government and municipal governments, and a lot of commercial customers. So we have companies like Toyota and Target and Lowe's and Johnson & Johnson. And then we've worked with the U.S. Navy. We've worked with various counties and municipalities around the country.
Okay, this is seen, of course, as a clean energy. How environmentally friendly is the process of manufacturing the cells, which isn't the part you do, but the
right.
companies that you get it from manufacture that that product? How environmentally friendly is that?
It's quite environmentally friendly. I mean, everything you do has some impact.
Right.
But with solar and photovoltaics, you know, we're using glass and silicon's from sand.
Right.
So the materials themselves are really quite benign. There is some processing that goes on with the solar cells to make them work most efficiently. But that's all done generally in clean rooms. There's very little emissions from the process, and the industry is very careful about being environmentally friendly.
Right, just to worry about sort of to make the worst case for it. Are powerful solvents used in the production of the cells? And if so, what happens to those solvents after they're used?
There are some solvents that are used, but they are you know, carefully collected and recycled and disposed of properly.
Okay. Now, and of course, the fundamental attraction of solar power is that the source of the energy isn't going to run out anytime soon. It's really not renewable, but it's more like unending.
It's renewable.
Oh.
In the sense that
the sun
is going to end in power
exactly.
someday, and I guess
right.
it will, some
right.
billions of years from now. But
right.
other than that, you know, once you build a solar module, it continues to produce power as long as it's receiving light.
Okay. Well, how much energy overall, or give us sort of a brief rundown of the sort of cost-benefit analysis and how it works and the budgeting, about the energy it takes to collect the raw materials, to build the solar cells, to assemble them, to install them, to set them up. How much energy does that take, and what essentially is the energy payback period that it takes to get enough at current prices, and then maybe say something about if prices go up, how much shorter that period would be?
Well, it's funny, we get that question, and no other source of fuel ever gets those questions. And in fact, renewables are the only energy sources that do pay for themselves. in energy. All fossil fuels take more energy than they actually have to use. Right? I mean,
is that true with gas? Well, let's take the main rival here, which is petroleum, oil, gasoline.
Right. You take oil out of the ground, you pump it out of the ground, you transport it somehow in a pipeline, you put it into a boat, you bring it over to a refinery, it gets refined, it goes into a truck, it goes in, into a gasoline station. We use way more energy producing that end product than solar and other renewables. So in the case of solar, it will pay for itself in terms of energy use in about 3 years. So if these things last 30 years or more, you've got a three-year payback on it. You've got 27 years of power that's basically free
in terms
of energy.
Now, you're talking both about the energy and the money? In other words...
No, I'm just talking about the energy. Now, money is a different issue.
Okay. So, but what you're saying then is the amount of energy it takes to set up a solar... operation will be returned to you in energy output from that system within 3 years,
right.
And the system is likely to run for 30 if
you
leave it alone.
Right.
So you're essentially getting ten times more out than you put in.
That's exactly right.
Okay. How about money?
So that's not the calculus that most people make. I mean,
right.
For the calculus people make is how long will it take us to make an investment in solar and get it paid back?
Right. And how does that tend to run?
Well, with pricing right now, and you know, the whole issue in the PV industry has been price. It's not technology.
Right.
Because the technology is rock solid. It's been around a long time. It works. It's just a matter of price. And the price has come down tenfold over the last 15 years. And it continues to decline every year. And the solar industry and Powerlight are obsessed with reducing the price to a point where we can compete head-on with utilities. So, and that day is not far away.
Okay.
Meantime, there are some programs around the country and around the world that will help support the cost differential. So in a place like California or a state like New Jersey, there are incentives in place that help pay for the upfront costs of these systems. And they typically pay 50 to 60% of the cost. So given that, then a customer makes an investment in a PV system and gets their money back on their investment between 5 and 8 years usually.
Okay. So the system will now pay for itself in 5 to 8 years.
Exactly.
And it's likely to run for 30.
Exactly.
So so after that's done, you're then getting am I too wild to say you get free energy for 20 years once you've done this?
It's exactly it. I mean, once you've paid for the system, then it's ongoing free energy.
Because you get they haven't figured out a way to tax or charge for the sun.
There's no fuel costs. There's virtually no maintenance on this equipment. And, you know, it lasts year after year after year.
And to beat an already dead horse, the political, there's not any political instability on the sun to worry about.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
Talking a little bit more on the sort of quasi-political side, where do all these systems get manufactured? What's the jobs picture here? Are these pro-jobs? Is this a pro-jobs technology?
Yeah. In fact, solar creates more jobs per megawatt than any other power source. And the numbers differ depending on which study you look at, but it's somewhere around 24, 25 jobs per megawatt are produced with solar systems. And, wind, as an example, produces something like 8 jobs per megawatt. And both of those are much better than fossil fuels, and I don't have the exact numbers on that, but, they're in the low... 1, 2, 3 jobs per megawatt.
Okay, and what kind of jobs are these? Are they white collar jobs, blue collar jobs, solar, yellow collar jobs?
It runs a gamut, but you've got you've got manufacturing jobs, you have installation jobs, service jobs, sales jobs, engineering jobs. It's really it runs the gamut.
Say a little bit about it if you know about it. What about the San Fernando? I'm in the San Fernando Valley right now, which is where the sun pours down like honey every day. Or more, and Siemens has a plant here, doesn't it, that was located recently back either in the moved from the Simi Valley or in the San Fernando Valley or somewhere? Do you know anything about that?
Shell has a plant.
Right.
there are two plants. There's one in L.A.
Right.
Which we Powerlight's cooperated with them on it. And then they have. I'm trying to.
Right. Sounds like you're trying
they
to.
They have a plant.
It's in Chatsworth, I think.
I'm sorry. I'm blacking out on that.
Just what I was essentially trying to do is talk about, you know, sort of localize the issue to show that here in Los Angeles it's had some impact.
Right, right. Yeah, and Shell has produced a plant there, but their major plant for Shell is in Camarillo.
Oh, okay. That's just north of here, actually.
Right.
Because I think the city of L.A. put in a place a policy that would give a tax incentive for companies that build plants within the
It wasn't tax
city.
Incentives. It was just an additional rebate.
Right, additional rebates, exactly.
Right. And Shell did set up a plant there, and Powerlight actually went in with them on that.
Based on what you know or what your company has been doing, what Powerlight's been doing, which cities or areas are the most receptive and most forward-looking on installing solar energy systems, photovoltaic systems?
In California?
In California, around the country, in the world?
Well, Sacramento has been a leader for many years in PV deployment and energy conservation. San Francisco recently passed a $100 million solar bond that supports systems in San Francisco.
Is that paying off? Is it leading to more installations?
Well, the first big project done there was is the Moscone Center.
Right.
Which now has a 675 kilowatt PV system on it, which was installed by Powerlight.
Right.
Those are the leaders in California. There's other activity around the world and around the states. New Jersey has put together pretty significant policy initiatives to support renewables and particularly solar.
How big a company is Powerlight, and how does it compare in the industry? Is it the leader? Is it in the top three or what?
We are the leader in deploying commercial systems by far. We are the leader. And this year we'll be somewhere around a $100 million company.
Okay. Are you privately held, publicly traded?
Privately held.
Okay. You have any thoughts of going public?
Yeah, we've talked about going public. It's something we talk about on a regular basis.
Okay.
There are no immediate plans.
Let me know first if you're going to do that. How efficient is photovoltaic technology in generating electricity compared to hydroelectric, biomass, or wind?
Efficiency is really not the key issue. It's,
okay.
It's what the cost per watt or kilowatt hour is.
Right.
And, you know, in terms of other technologies, solar is more expensive. Hydro is very inexpensive. Biomass is quite competitive. Wind is very competitive now on a kilowatt-hour basis. And solar is not quite there yet, with the same cost per kilowatt-hour. But solar has value or benefits that don't get monetized.
Such as?
As an example. It's a distributed generation, so this power goes all over the place throughout the grid system.
Right.
And it will relieve strain on the grid, the transmission and distribution. And so there's real value of that so that the utilities don't have to build new power lines, as an example.
What's the current state, both technically and administratively, of the ability of, say, your installations to put power back into the grid when they're not using it, and to thereby, as you said, alleviate stress on the grid, and make money presumably for the companies that are putting the power back in?
Well, in California, New Jersey, and about 20 other states, there's a law called net metering, which requires utilities to allow electricity to flow back into the grid if those systems are producing excess power.
Is that generally pretty straightforward technically?
It's very straightforward. It literally just turns your meter backwards. There's nothing complicated about it.
You just drive the electrons in the other direction.
Electrons flow in the other direction. So the law's been put in place to make sure that the utilities allow that to happen. California has one of the best net metering laws, which will go up to 1 megawatt of systems. New New Jersey have just topped that recently to 2 megawatts. So for our commercial customers, that's very important because if a factory is closed down on a Sunday and we're producing more power on that roof with solar than is being used in the building, we can flow those electrons back to the utility.
That's why they call it Sunday.
There you go. Now, that's important to the customer because the customer gets full retail value of that electricity credited on their bill.
So essentially, they're only going to have to pay then for, say, 4 days of electricity and get five.
Exactly. They pay for the net of that.
Okay.
So that's important for them, and it's important for the utility, too, because another benefit, an attribute of solar, is that it produces its peak amount of energy at peak demand times for the utility. So around noon, when it's hottest during the day, people are putting their air conditioners on, the utilities have a big demand surge. And so therefore they have to fire up new power plants, they have to go out and buy energy on the spot market. All those things are expensive, and in the case of firing up power plants, they generally use coal-fired plants, or the dirtiest, oldest plants for that. And so environmentally that's damaging. But solar is producing at that time, it's at its peak, so we are actually reducing the demand on the entire utility grid with our system.
So in fact, this is a little bit like when I'm on the freeways in LA and everyone's just sitting there and it's really hot and all the exhaust is heating up the microclimate of the freeway, mm-hmm. and everyone then turns on their air conditioners to keep cool, and that burns more fuel, which heats up the environment, which requires et cetera, et cetera. It's really the same thing for stationary operations. When we're sitting here and it gets to be 90 degrees and the radio says, well, there's going to be a power outage pretty soon because everyone's turned on their air conditioning.
Exactly.
With more solar power, more photovoltaics, the stronger the sun shines, the more electricity is generated to cool the houses and buildings.
Exactly. So if you look at it on a policy level, it makes sense to support solar, even if it's more expensive per kilowatt hour, because it has a big benefit on the demand reduction. So that's what when I say that a lot of these things are not monetized, we don't get the full value of the demand reduction for the transmission and distribution system. That's not monetized in their electricity bill. So another benefit. You know, there are other benefits of solar. It's domestic power. We're not importing energy from outside the country. Of course, it's coming from the sun.
Right.
So there's some real benefit there.
What say a little bit about the politics of it. Where is the political community or different political communities or visionary political leaders talking about solar energy in the ways that we've just been talking about? Its obvious benefits for employment and pollution and balance of payments and so on. Where's the political community on this now?
Right. California has been the clear leader on this. They're way ahead of the rest of the country. So there's been a lot of activity out there and a lot of job creation. A lot of PV has been installed in California. Recently, over the last couple of years, New Jersey has put together a set of policies that is as good as anywhere in the country. And I can tell you what it comes down to. It just comes down to leadership. And in the case of New Jersey, a governor was elected that cares about this issue, that appointed people at the Board of Public Utilities and in other key positions that support the technology, and they put together a rational energy plan which includes energy efficiency and renewables, and particularly solar. So the case of New Jersey, the policy has been driven in New Jersey by the job creation opportunity of solar, and in fact, it's been a huge success. The solar industry has grown 550% here in the last 3 years as a result of the policy that was put in place. So if we could spread this around the country, and this is what we're trying to do in the industry, from state to state, and have progressive policies like we have in California and New Jersey, then the benefits will be shared by these other states.
Now, is photovoltaics a viable strategy in places like Minnesota, Wisconsin, Washington State, where it's either snows or rains or?
Yeah, we have systems all over the country. It's there are different solar resources around the country. There's clearly more sun in Southern California than there is in Ithaca, New York.
Right.
But there are other factors. The factors are the cost of electricity and what incentives are in place. As an example, Germany, one of the least sunny places in the world,
right.
is the second largest solar user in the world. They have an extraordinary policy in place that has created an incredible upsurge in demand for solar in Germany. And in fact, they are absorbing all the excess capacity in module making right now in the world.
What's the upside growth potential? How much of the solar potential is being tapped now compared to how much could be tapped?
Oh, it's tiny.
2-3%? Less?
Less.
So this
if you look at the amount of input, value of solar into the California grid, I'm not sure the exact number, but 1%, 2%. It's small. So the potential is high. You know, we could produce enough electricity for the entire country with a 45-mile radius set of solar installations.
Well, we got some desert out here that has 45-mile radius.
So my point is, it could be done. That's not what we're proposing. We have the ability to do this. It's a matter of having the will to do it and to move away from an irrational energy policy to a rational one.
Okay, let me talk about sort of two global issues.
Sure.
What's the potential and importance and significance about solar photovoltaics, which of course can be more decentralized than some other methods, for less developed countries, countries that don't have a power grid, don't have a communications grid, but do have plenty of sun shine?
Well, that's a good point. I mean, the interesting thing is the PV industry grew up on those applications. Because even when PV was 10 times more expensive than it is today, it was cost-effective to use it in places in remote areas. For instance, the telecommunications industry has been a big buyer of PV for the last 15, 20 years. And it's because they have power requirements in remote areas, like microwave repeaters on tops of mountains,
right,
as an example. You know, for them to have a generator there, and keep that generator running, or to run power lines up there, would cost a fortune.
They have to bring the oil in to run it on donkey.
Exactly. So the most cost-effective way, even 10 years ago, when PV was 10 times as expensive, was solar and photovoltaics. So the off-grid applications are really the most cost-effective, and what we're seeing around the world is that in remote areas, places like South Africa as an example. South Africa is an industrialized country.
Right.
But they have millions upon millions of people in remote areas that they just cannot get to with grid-connected power.
Right.
Because of the cost and the time it would take to get to them. The most efficient, fastest, most cost-effective way to get them power is solar. It's just like with the phone industry in emerging countries. You go into Africa now and everyone's carrying a cell phone.
Right.
You know, they have, hopped over, skipped over,
right,
the old method of building wires and all that. It's the same thing with the energy industry. They should skip over centralized power plants to distributed generation, which includes solar.
And, of course, what you said about the decentralized solar, the decentralized non-gridified or wireless cellular system,
right,
wireless internet, is obviously something else that can work along the same lines.
Exactly.
And there's obviously a synergy, it seems to me, between cellular phones, solar power, and wireless internet.
That's true.
So that you can essentially you can connect any place on Earth with any other place on Earth,
yes,
and generate the power to do that,
right,
by combining these technologies.
That's exactly right.
Why don't we do it?
It is happening.
Or where is it happening the most that you've seen?
Well, it's happening in places like India, Indonesia, Bangladesh, Philippines. I mean, there's a lot of activity there. But frankly, these emerging countries have a very hard time getting investment. And this is a program that requires investment, and just we're not seeing the kind of investment they really need.
So again, what we've got, the technology is ready to go, but there's a question of political will and financial will
and priorities.
Okay. does it make any sense to set up photovoltaic generators in really sunny, deserted places and hook that up through a grid to other places? In other words, turn certain places into solar farms and pipe the electricity in other places? Or is that too, does too much get lost in heat dissipation by sending it from the Mojave Desert to New York or elsewhere?
It's really best as distributed generation. Central power plants, can be done. They've been done on kind of mini central power plants.
Right.
But the beauty of solar is it could be distributed anywhere. So it makes more sense to install it where you use it, so that
right.
you don't have those line losses.
Right. Because there's a lot of line losses. I was thinking, why not build systems on both sides of the planet? And as it becomes dark in one place, use the power on the light side.
I like the way you think, but. In a practical means, that's not the right way to do it.
All right.
Every house, every building should have PV on it.
Okay. Now, but you don't put PV on people's houses. You put them on post offices and city halls and other
right.
big buildings. Are you thinking of moving into that business, or that doesn't make sense economically for you, or are there other companies that are doing that in an effective way? What's the economics of putting PV on all the apartment buildings in Los Angeles, for example?
Now, our focus has been commercial systems, and we do it because we think in terms of reducing costs, the best cost per watt of installed systems are the larger scale systems.
It makes more sense.
It makes more sense. But that doesn't mean that it doesn't make sense to put them on homes. I mean, Governor Schwarzenegger now has is discussing a bill right now to have 50% of all new homes have PV on them.
As a requirement?
As a requirement.
Okay. And
we support that. We're not in that business, but we support that because we think it's the right thing to do.
What about we've been mainly talking about the limitations through politics and finance.
Right.
What about technologically? What's the outlook for possibly, I don't use the term quantum leaps, but quantum leaps in efficiency of photovoltaics? For example, I've been trying to get an interview, but failing with some people at Los Alamos National Laboratories who've been doing research on what they call impact ionization, which they say might increase efficiency of PV by 30-40%. What do you know about that or other possible scientific breakthroughs that might increase the efficiency of photovoltaic systems?
There are a lot of people, there are a lot of companies, there are a lot of laboratories working on, newer technologies, different technologies that would reduce the cost of PV. I mean, again, the industry's been obsessed with getting our costs down. So we don't care if it's from silicon wafers or from thin film or from nanotechnology. We just want the cost per watt down. Now, having said that, I don't expect any major breakthroughs in the near term. What we are seeing and have seen is incremental increases in efficiency and in manufacturability and delivering. The solar cells is one part of the cost, but there are other costs of, installing them and marketing them and financing them. All these things we're working on as an industry to reduce the cost of delivery of systems to customers, and therefore, cost per kilowatt hour. The trend at the moment is we're seeing about a 5% reduction a year right now for the last 2 or 3 years.
5% reduction in cost?
Right.
Per year. Let me ask a few sort of minute technical questions. I was reading your website. It's apparently very important for customers that you don't have to penetrate their buildings to install your solar panels. What's up with that?
Yeah. Well, our founder, Tom Dinwiddie, back in 1991, surveyed the industry, tried to figure out, what it's going to take to put in large-scale systems, and saw that flat roofs was a tremendous opportunity in terms of underutilized assets that could be generating energy. But the problem with the conventional mounting systems back then for PV were that it required penetrations into the roof.
In order to do what?
In order to just connect the frame to the roof so they won't blow away.
Okay.
Okay. That's a big problem for flat roof owners because every penetration you make is a potential leak.
Right.
So they shied away from that completely. So what PowerLite did is we created a product that requires no penetrations, no adhesives, literally lays on the roof and can withstand, because of the way we design it, up to 140 mile an hour winds. So we've eliminated the penetration issue. It's very easy to install, so it goes in a lot faster than other technologies. You're not doing nuts and bolts and lock washers and all the normal things.
Right.
In addition, the way that we've designed this product, it actually has a one-inch foam board as part of the mounting base. That foam will insulate the building, so it reduces the heating and air conditioning load of that building, and it protects the roof from the damaging effects of the sun.
Of course.
So we have multiple benefits. So this product is not only, you know, no penetration, but it offered other quantifiable financial benefits. Clean electricity, clearly, insulating the buildings, so reducing their heating and air conditioning load, and protecting and extending the life of the roof. So that extra value has made the Perlite's ability to sell large commercial projects that much better.
Okay. How long does it usually take from the time that a building owner makes a decision to go forward to having the first electricity flow?
Usually between 3 and 6 months.
Okay. What's the cost per kilowatt of your best, biggest system?
We're typically in the range of about $6 a watt or $6,000 per kilowatt, and that's total cost installed.
Right.
And then, of course, you have the incentives. In California, they pay for 50% of that.
Okay. What's involved in maintaining one of your solar arrays? Do they have to be cleaned every so often, or what?
Very little maintenance, because there are no moving parts in PV, there's very little maintenance involved. In dry, dusty areas where you get lots of buildup of dust on these things, you may have a cleaning procedure that you
is
do.
Is it complex and esoteric, or you just hose it off?
No, you just hose it off. On the East Coast, you know, we get enough rain out here on a regular basis that it's not even an issue.
Okay. Is Perlite a soup-to-nuts operation? Do you take care of everything from planning to installation to maintenance and service?
Soup-to-nuts, turnkey system installation from manufacturing to installation to service.
Okay. The pictures of solar installations on your site look very attractive to me, but maybe not everyone feels that way. Are solar aesthetics ever an issue for you or for your customers?
Well, you know, most of our projects go on flat roofs, so you don't even see them.
Right.
You can't see them. In fact, some customers want to see them. So sometimes we build ground-mounted arrays out front, just a small array, just so that people know that there is solar up there.
So that lets people know that they're a forward-thinking kind of company.
That's exactly right. Now, the Moscone Center, you can, from some neighboring buildings, see the arrays on the building. But, I mean, a black roof is not particularly attractive, itself. So now we're putting these solar cells on it that are really quite elegant, and either black or blue in color.
Oh, okay. So they're going to come in designer colors yet, or there are physical constraints why it
Well, you can do that, but certain colors absorb the energy from the sun better, and it's
okay.
Going to be black or blue.
How does this tie in at all with electric cars, which seem to have come and gone and have been replaced in the kind of people who bought them by hybrids? But is there some, or for other means of transportation, can solar panels be put on trains? Can they be put along train lines? What's the ability to turn solar energy into a transportation?
There's not enough energy hitting the surface of a vehicle to power the vehicle on its own. Although you've seen some of these, solar car races where they do that, but
right.
those are not practical applications. It's possible when if efficiency had a five times increase, which is unlikely,
right.
That you could do that, but. There is an opportunity to charge a solar electric car. People drive into work.
Right.
They plug it into the solar charger, and at the end of the day, it's charged.
Right.
That's completely possible. The issue with electric vehicles is not its power source; it's the battery storage.
Right.
For some reason, we have not been able to figure out how to have much less expensive, much lighter, more efficient. Battery storage.
Presumably people are working on that as well?
People have been working on it, but I've heard nothing.
Nothing, okay.
Any expectations.
Okay, at the other end of the spectrum, what about vast solar arrays in space with the power collected, generated, beamed down to the terrestrial grid by microwave or similar means?
Those schemes have been discussed mostly by scientists, as an academic exercise. On a practical basis, there's no need for that. It's a lot less expensive to install PV on rooftops and parking lots it is to put them in space and then beam it down.
You don't have to go up there to get it. It comes down here just naturally.
It does. Now, the advantage in space is you don't have the atmosphere, so you get a lot more energy per square foot, but the cost of bringing them to space and then shipping it down is just out of this world.
And I was worried about the birds who flew under the microwaves and became turkey, you know, turkeys on your table as they fly by. Do you consider yourself just in business for the money, or do you feel that you have a mission beyond that?
No one in this business is in it for the money only. You just couldn't survive it. and I'm being a little facetious about that, but almost everyone in the solar industry is completely driven by the mission of what we're doing.
And how would you define that mission?
The mission is to make clean solar energy a mainstream part of our energy supply, you know, with multiple benefits to society and to the individual. So, you know, we are driven by profit. I mean, we definitely are a private sector company trying to make money. We want to do well for our employees, for the owners, for stock, shareholders. But we are driven by a mission as well, and I think that's pretty much across the board in the solar industry.
Okay, now I did an interview with David Goodstein, professor at Caltech, called Out of Gas. I'm now reading a book called Hubert's Peak by a professor at Princeton called named Kenneth DeFays. Mm-hmm. And Richard Heinberg's written a book called The Party Over, and even Pete Peterson, pillar of the Republican establishment, has a book out called Running on Empty. Mm-hmm. It's apparent that the oil is going to run out sooner or later. How does photovoltaics fit into the overall picture, and especially in terms of the inevitable depletion of the fossil fuel pool?
Well, I mean, it's a fact of life that fossil fuels will run out. There is no question that will happen. And if not in our lifetime, then in our children's lifetime. So, I mean, it's absolutely lunacy that we don't start developing policies now to wean ourselves off of those fossil fuels. You know, rather than wait for the next major crisis. You know, we've done projections. There's a lot going on at DOE and our National Renewable Energy Laboratory, some modeling of, what is possible. And we've done some modeling that shows that if we put policies in place in this country that promoted energy efficiency, plus allowed the solar industry to grow at the same rate it's growing right now, that we could provide 100% of our energy from solar in about 40 years. Again, not likely to happen that way, but it's an illustration that it can be done if we have the will to do it.
Okay, we need the knowledge and we need the will. I think you've told us about the knowledge part of it. The will is up to us.
It's up to us.
Well, thank you very much for doing the work you do and for talking to us about it today on Utopia Media.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.